Hi, my name is Nika Zubanajad, and you listen to Sixth Sense Podcast.
What is up, Nation's Capital? Welcome back to the not-so-frequent Sixth Sense Podcast. Joining me in studios is Graham Creech. Creech, what's going on, bud?
Good. Not much, buddy. I guess not too much. Missing hockey.
Binghamton starts tonight, though. First exhibition game.
Against Hershey.
And it's sort of timely because joining us later on in the show is last year's Binghamton head coach, Kirk Kleinendorst, the new head coach of the University of Alabama Huntsville Chargers. So that should be an interesting interview.
What are the odds he'll improve on last season's record?
They were, what, 227-1, I believe?
Yeah.
It scored like 120-30. So, yeah, that's a challenge. But, you know, maybe you can build it from the ground up. And if he does, that's a rewarding thing to do. And you collect all the accolades, too, so you can't complain. It looks good on you if you can build it up from the ground floor.
I believe it's only a Div 1 hockey team in the southern U.S. Got
Is
a
it?
Couple Ottawa area connections. There's a couple guys that played in the CJHL. And
small world.
Lots of things we can ask him about, especially with that bingo roster that's looking pretty good for this year.
Yeah, when the news broke, I looked at it and I'm like, Alabama, there's hockey in Alabama, but it's growing. The sport's growing, obviously. So it should be an interesting interview. So stay tuned for that. So I guess first things first, we might as well talk about this lockout that's going on.
You spend a lot of time on that today, or
no,
not too much?
No, we're not gonna delve too deep into it. But what's it been like? 3 weeks?
Feels like longer. How many times has someone come up to you say, "Hey, what are you hearing about this lockout? How long is it gonna last?"
And it's the same response. It's just I don't know.
Whatever.
Do you care actually that much?
I'm angry. I do care because hockey's one of the things I love most. And I still get my taste. I've been to a couple 67s games. Been to a couple junior A games, and I play hockey, but I want to see hockey played at the highest level. So I miss that, and I'd like to sit here and say, oh, I'm not going to be a fan if they miss another full season, but that's not going to happen. I'll come back. So I do care. I miss it. I want to see the young guys in Ottawa progress, and I miss it.
Yeah. Are you going to go to many 67s games? Because that's the alternative right now in town. And they're playing hockey at Scotiabank Place.
Went to the home opener, and I'll go see certain stars that I want to see. I probably won't go to a ton, and I'm living downtown, so it's not convenient to go. I know everyone's been saying this for years, but I'd make it convenient to go visit to CSN's game as opposed to 67s. Although it's still an exciting time. I do work a lot of the games, too, so I won't be at as many as I would do Senators games, but I'm going to definitely make it out. You've been to one or two, I think.
Yeah, I went to the Niagara game, and it was interesting. Like, Dougie Hamilton was there. Ryan Strome was playing.
Yeah, see,
and
exactly.
I wanted to see CeCe. I wanted to see Monahan. I wanted to see some of Ottawa's bright young stars. But it's nowhere near the level that I'm accustomed to watching.
Yeah.
Because I do, like you, I end up going to an inordinate number of Ottawa Senators games per season. So
42-plus.
Yeah, so it's just from that evaluation standpoint, it's not going to satiate my desire to watch great hockey, but at the same time, it has me contemplating whether or not I should buy that AHL online package so I can actually watch Binghamton play.
I'm definitely going to take, depending on how long the lockout goes, I'll definitely take a trip to Binghamton for a game or two. You thinking that?
Yeah.
No? Not too big on it? I don't know. I'd like to see.
I'm going to the Finger Lakes, I think, later this month, which is kind of, well, it's just south of Rochester, but yeah, I don't think I'll be planning too many trips to Binghamton.
Well, I think one or two. I'd like to see the boys play, and they're going to have a good team, as will many AHL teams.
So, looking at the lockout, where do you place the blame?
It's tough to tell without being inside there, but I'm always feeling that.
You mean you're not microanalyzing all the little PR blurbs that come out every day about them not speaking? You don't read too much into that?
I don't know. You keep hearing they're not going to have serious discussions till games are missed. My standpoint is there better be hockey by December, January. I'll be very upset and pissed off if the whole league's wiped out or a whole season's wiped out again. That's a joke to me if that happens.
Does it bother you that the same ownership group that came out after the 2005 lockout and ceremoniously thumped their chest and said, all right, we got what we wanted. Now let's play hockey. That we're here 7 years later, and the same collective group of owners is saying, no, the system that we made and tailored to fit our needs is not working. So we're going to go hat in hand back to the players and ask them to take a salary reduction so we can make this work for us. Does any of that make sense to you right now? Like many fans, I'm sort of empathetic towards the players in the sense that they exist in the NHL world with this free market. They get what their owners and the general managers pay them.
Especially seeing all those big, long-term, huge money signing bonus deals right before the...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not interested in picking sides right now. I'd just rather them get a deal done. It's a joke.
It kind of bothers me that the people who hand out these contracts are the ones who have a shelf life of like 1 to 3 to 4 years minimum before they're turfed. You know, they don't care whether or not they're signing these deals because at the end of them, they're not going to be the GM when Ryan Suter's contract ends. They don't care. It's all about winning now, making money now, making your splash now. I'm just...
You're fired up. I can see it.
Fired up. It's just... Does any of it make sense to you right now?
Honestly, I'm at the point where I don't care to talk about it. Like, I'm saying that during a podcast. But you know what it is? It's the same question every day. And who do we blame? I don't care. I just want a deal done.
Yeah, that works for me as well. So a number of Ottawa players are finally starting to make their ways overseas. Erik Karlsson's in Jokerit. Jason Spetz is over in Switzerland. Are you following them closely whatsoever?
I wouldn't use the word
following.
Other
than to see what kind of uniforms that they were actually wearing overseas.
I checked out those Karlsson pictures for sure. Nice to see old friend Jarkko Ruutu there too. Not really. I did spend like an hour on HockeyDB the other day. Just seeing where everyone was at, and then through that seeing names of guys like Oleg Tvergodovsky's playing with Malkin and Gonchar in Russia. So I just kept going from team to team to see where old guys that I haven't heard of in 5 years, where they're playing, what they're up to. But as far as how many points did Spezza get last night, I don't really care.
Zero. Goose egg. Three games, 0 points, minus two. I'm concerned. No, I'm not. Not at all.
No. He's probably having a good time in Switzerland, though.
You know what I am kind of glad about right now? It's 40 years and the Summit Series is finally over. Holy God.
For 10 years. It's over for 10 years.
As a nation, we've milked that about as much as we possibly can. We get it. It was an important time in our country's history. We get it. It's over. It's over. I was getting to the point where I was joking with a couple of my friends and we're watching. Well, I actually wasn't watching, but they were watching Game 8 and they were tweeting online. I could see what they were writing and like people were going crazy because so-and-so scores leading up to it, and I'm just waiting for Paul Henderson to score. I jokingly texted my friend as it happened. Did you put your ear up to the window right there as Henderson scored? He's like, no, why? Because if you were really quiet, you could have heard a scream, and that was Liam Maguire orgasming.
Big push. H-A-O-F.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're probably going to hear it in another 10 years. Aww. And obviously, it's because of the lack of relevant hockey stories to talk about right now. That's why... Right now, as we speak, the 2005 gold medal World Juniors is on TV right now.
I was joking with another friend of mine that to combat these pro-Canada games that they're playing on TSN, that CBC will start playing all the Leafs-Ottawa series to remind fans in Toronto what playoff hockey actually looks like.
That's a cruel joke to me, though. That hurts. I don't want to see those games.
Could you actually sit through those series?
No.
I think I could. Because it would just bring back so many memories of seeing guys like Rickard Person cross-check Ty Domi into the boards. And then you have the Alfredson-Tucker moment, which is infamous.
I did see the New Jersey-Ottawa 03 Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know how many. It was on the NHL Network. Don't know how many games I watched. But I did see Game 7, and that hurt. That really hurt. So, do I feel like sitting through four Leafs Sens playoff series where it's going to be pure disappointment? No, absolutely not. Especially not if there's a Leafs buddy fan in the room. I really wanted to play them in the 05. Was it the 05? Yeah, 2005-2006 playoffs. Really felt we could have just ran through them that year.
Was that one of the years they finished ninth?
That was, yeah. That would have been fun. And then obviously the 07 year, but... woulda, coulda, it's all we have to say and hope for.
Speaking of the Leafs,
oh,
what do you think of the whole Nazem Kadri thing?
like Don Cherry blasting the Leafs and the ripping his...
Even the organization coming out and challenging him, trying to motivate him through the media. Do you have any problems with what Toronto did as an organization first, and then we'll get into Cherry's comments later? I'm guessing because they came out and did it that way, that their private mechanisms that they've possibly used in the past weren't working.
Trying to picture a prospect in, like an Ottawa prospect in similar shoes, if they had done that. I don't think I like it, especially where he's at right now. Maybe if he was 24 or 25, sure. But he hasn't been given a huge opportunity at the NHL level. And Brian Burke tricked him into Brian Murray, and you know how that story goes. Who are you taking? Well, I'm taking him. So I don't know. It feels kind of good from this end. But I don't know. Is Don Cherry right? Are they destroying him? Pretty sure his ego's taking.
Who knows what's going on behind closed doors? Yeah. Maybe everything they've tried at that point hasn't worked. So before the guy's value is completely gone, they're trying to motivate him one last time.
That's fair. But is this the wrong time, though, with no NHL season? He has no pressure right now. Playing the AHL, light it up.
Well, he's been there for, what, 2 seasons already? At some point, you have to get yourself physically set and in a good spot to finally crack the roster. And you look at Toronto's team right now, it's not very good.
That's why...
Especially down the middle.
Wait to make these comments when training camp opens, if it does.
But is it overblown? So is body fat's in the lower 5% of the roster. Assuming they brought in 36 guys like Binghamton, that means he had one of the worst two body fat percentages on the team. Being fit helps. He has a good skill level. It might mean nothing in the greater scheme of things. It's just a small nuance that might be overblown by the Toronto media.
Yeah. Nothing to talk about, right?
Exactly. But, I mean, for Eakin to come out publicly and say that, obviously he must have had the organization's blessing.
Either that or he's gotten in big shit for it.
Or he knows he has a long leash.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to look at it from that dynamic as well. But Don Cherry's just looking for any reason these days to shit on the Brian Burke regime, like many of us, actually. So in that regard, kudos to Cherry. But yeah, the AHL is going on tonight. Training camp's finally over. Hockey is back.
I'm excited for this.
Are you?
Yeah.
Ottawa has a number of the best prospects down there.
Zibat apparently has a beauty goal tonight.
Shane Prince is down there. Former Ottawa 67. Jared Cowan's down there.
Apparently,
Jakob Silverberg, Mark Stone, Zibanejad, Andre Patterson still there. Mike Hoffman's still there. Pajot.
DaCosta.
There's a lot of high-end talent. DaCosta. It's going to be interesting to see how that roster shakes itself out.
Do you see AJ's tweets last night? He was tweeting from Bingo, obviously, and lots of praise going around right now for Jared Cowan. Apparently, he's hands down the best player on the ice, and he's just destroying people. Tim Murray, I guess, made a comment about he's worried that someone's going to get hurt from the size of checks that this guy's throwing around. That excites me, man.
That's awesome because he's one of the few people who's in the running to be paired with Erik Karlsson once this hopeful NHL 2012-13 season actually begins. So to see him, hopefully, even though it is just a small sample size, if he can elevate his game and step up and be a top-pairing guy with Erik Karlsson, wow.
I probably said this on a podcast during the playoffs last year. Once this guy gets nasty, he's going to be good, man.
Oh, he can skate well. He has the length. And he's physical. Three excellent assets to have. And if he can take it to the next level, it makes that Nazem Kadri pick at 8 look even worse.
It sure does.
Is there anyone else in Binghamton that you're looking forward to seeing? Robin Lehner, who we haven't really spoken about to this point?
Well, I'm sure we'll touch a lot.
What do you expect from him this year?
I guess tough to answer right now until we know if Ben Bishop's going to go down for sure.
That's a great point, because Ben Bishop qualified for the postseason roster last year. He's eligible to sign a PTO. So are you kind of worried that might end in Lehner's time? Because Lehner's a guy who's been down there for the past 2 seasons, and he hasn't played the lion's share of games. He split games with Brust, and last season he split a lot of time with McKenna. So at what point do you want to see him end up being the guy in Binghamton?
Well, I would have liked that for sure this year, but as we talked about earlier too, just through passing and everything, Ben Bishop had to find somewhere to play this year. Just coming out of the AHL, finish the season up with the big club. He's a young guy still. He needs to play. He's still developing. Obviously, he's going to take games away from Leonard. Even if Leonard stands on his head, they're still going to give him games. I assume it'll be somewhere close to 50-50. Whereas if he wasn't going down or isn't going down, I assume Robin's going to get a majority of the starts down there. And he's going to have a good team. And he seems, from all the comments from the Ottawa media down there, he seems focused. He's in better shape.
He's dropped 25 to 30 pounds.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Robin Leonard.
Everybody is. I wrote a blog article the other day that said, of all the prospects, he's the one who I want to see pan out the most.
He has the highest star potential, man.
I think he has the highest ceiling.
Part of it is we've never had a great goaltender. But I just...
Ron Tugnet.
Tugger's a beauty, but... Enough said.
Speaking of revisiting old playoff series, go watch that first playoff series versus Buffalo. Some of the goals that went in, you just close your eyes.
I swear the puck went through his glove.
Oh, Derek Plant. Killer. Killer.
But no, this kid's going to be a star goaltender, I think. If he gets... We'll talk to Kirk Kleinendorf about it. Gets his mental makeup going. Gets in game shape.
Because that seems to be the big question mark, right? It's his attitude. It's his mental makeup. It's his maturity. Do you think those are possibly some overblown aspects of Robin Lehner's game? Because he is such a young goaltender, and he won the Calder Cup as a teenager, and only three guys have done that in the AHL's history, before him, I should say. So sometimes you have to realize that he's been in the organization for a while, but look at all the things that he's accomplished already.
Even when he's been up for the handful of games he's played, he's always played well.
The shutout versus Boston last year?
Unreal.
Oh. All right, so it's about that time when we should probably call Kirk Kleinendorf. This is a good lead-in. Robin Lehner.
Plenty to talk about down in Bingo. I'm sure he's got plenty of solid answers. Should be a solid interview. I'm pumped.
I can tell. I'm pumped. Anyways, when we get back after break, Kirk Kleinendorf will be joining us. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, listeners, joining us right now on the line is the new head coach of the University of Alabama, Huntsville, Kirk Kleinendorf. Welcome to the Sixth Sense Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Well, first things first, congratulations on the hire.
Yeah, thank you very much. An interesting one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it caught a lot of us here in Ottawa by surprise. Maybe you could get into how this process came about.
Yeah, again... I guess how it all came about. It came through Lou Lamoriello, a guy that goes back with me for about 30 years. And I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, at the time, it's one of those things, the first word out of my mouth was intrigued, I guess. It's not exactly, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, would I be in Huntsville? I'd probably said, I don't think so, So intrigued I was. And then, just things kind of started to fall into place, and I started making some contacts and, touching base with some of the people that I have a lot of trust in and respect. And the more I dug, the more I realized that it may not be a bad situation, a little bit of a diamond in the rough, so to speak, I guess. And, one thing led to another, and I'm here.
So the Chargers have been around since the 1970s, I believe, but many would still call Alabama a non-traditional market. I know you've had experience coaching in places like San Diego and Raleigh. How much of your coaching experience in these non-traditional markets played a role in your decision to go to Alabama?
Well, you know what? If you really want to, look at everything, if you're going to put pros and cons down on a sheet of paper, obviously you're going to come up with both sides of a ledger, without a doubt. I mean, for those up in Canada, because, again, Alabama does seem so south, and it is. I mean, it is a southern part of the United States. But, Nashville is only an hour and a half away, and I know that they've found a way to make that market work. And the way they did it was initially probably a lot of losing and then some winning, and next thing you know, they've got it turned around, and now it's hard to find a ticket in Nashville. You can say the same thing about Dallas and some of the other southern markets. So I wasn't going to let that be the reason that I didn't do this, And if you take a look at my body of work, the one thing that I've not done is coach at the collegiate level. And you know, it's something that has always been in the back of my mind. And, you know, when the president called me, I'll be very honest with you. I told him, you know what, I can't sit here right now and tell you that I'm going to love this experience. I can't, you know. But at the same time, I can't sit here and tell you that I'm not going to love it. You know, I said, I've never done it. I've always done pro. I love pro, you know, but if you're telling me that you've got an opportunity and you're looking for somebody to come in and basically clean a program out and then build it back up, that sounds like a neat challenge. And that's exactly what I'm doing.
So you're coming off a 2-27-1 season where I guess the club was outscored heavily. Do you have any expectations going into this season to improve on that? Or?
Well, of course I do. You know, what coach wouldn't? You know, and you guys, again, I'm going to say this. I loved Ottawa. You know, I absolutely loved my time in Ottawa. I have so much respect for Brian Murray, you know, and he's done a wonderful job. And even down in Binghamton, I mean, it was a great experience. But I can also say that you guys maybe are a little young to feel the pain of the Senators when they first came into the NHL. But, boy, they had some long, hard losing seasons, you know. And I guess that's where we are right now. So, you know, there was a time, early days, when the big club went through stretches where they didn't win a lot of games. But now when you take a look at the program and you see what Brian has done and you see the kind of teams that are being put on the ice, you know, that's a distant memory. So you got to start somewhere, and I'm here because of the fact that they won two games last year. You know, honestly, that's why I'm here. I'm here because they want to build a program, and basically it's a gut. I mean, we're gutting it. It's just like building a house. You know, if you gut it first and then you build it back up and make it beautiful, that's really what the challenge is here. And then the other thing is, fellas, this is a push, and again, I understand that you're a Canadian market, but in the U.S., Division I college is what rivals the USHL, you know, and this is a push by the University of Alabama in Huntsville to get into the WCHA, and at the end of the day, that's what this is all about.
I was actually at Ottawa's first home game. My parents had season tickets back in 92-93. So I was at the first game, and you're right.
You can appreciate where I'm
absolutely,
coming from.
Absolutely. And if you can build it from the ground up, that is going to be a really rewarding experience for you. And
where do we have to go but up?
Exactly.
I mean, if you're looking for a challenge as a coach, you know, I mean, we all love to win without a doubt. But put that aside. I mean, if you have an opportunity to go south and grow the game, and if you have an opportunity to go into a program and make it your own, this is that opportunity.
So just I've gone over the roster, and it looks like there's a few lads on the team that have some Ottawa area connections. They've played in like the junior A hockey in Kanata, and as well as for Pembroke Longer Kings. Do you know the players well yet, or is there anything you can comment about the local connections, like Matt Hagan? Is from Ottawa.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, do I know the guys? Well, no, I don't. And, you know, when I joined the under-18 program, I didn't know any of those guys either. You know, and over time, obviously, you get to know them, you get to appreciate them, you find out what their strengths. It's what every coach at every level right now is doing. It's what Luke's doing in Binghamton. You know, he's still trying to figure out the players and how he's going to use them and what they're like, even though he probably knows their faces and their names. I don't even have that down yet. I'm not going to lie to you. But when we went around the room, when I met the lads, it was kind of neat. We talked about that, you know, and so they're familiar with me, obviously. That makes it interesting for me because I feel like I have an Ottawa connection now. But the true answer is I really don't know yet my team. I'm still trying to figure out names and faces and all those other things.
Looking back at the time when you stepped down as the head coach in Binghamton, I kind of viewed it as an interesting time because there was the looming lockout that looked like it was going to happen. There was an influx of prospects who looked like they were going to be headed down to Binghamton. Was it a difficult personal decision for you at the time?
Yeah, you know, I don't. It's. I think if you remember when I left, I said at the press conference, this is probably going to raise more questions than I answer, and I'm going to probably stick to that line. I mean, obviously, fellas, there's a reason that I did what I did, because there's so many good things about that the Ottawa Senators and Brian Murray and what he's done. I mean, and I think they're going to do just fine. I think they're going to be just fine without Kurt Kleinendorf behind the bench in Binghamton. So I have a lot of fond memories. I have a lot of respect for Brian Murray, you know, but I don't want to go there.
Yeah, no, and I respect that decision of yours. One thing that you did say that I saw in the Binghamton papers was after your season, you said, "I really appreciate the city of Binghamton. I think for whatever reason, this community gets a bad reputation. I don't think that's fair." Earlier in the season, we saw the follow from the Andre Pettersson interview with a Swedish reporter. Could you comment maybe a little bit more or elaborate on Binghamton's reputation?
Yeah, I'm going to stick to that. Binghamton was one of those smaller communities that you have to take, you guys have to understand that there's a difference between looking at something from an adult's mind and then looking at it from a young hockey player's perspective. And they can be two totally different things, you know. And I've always, and you know, Brian, the first question Brian asked me was, what about Binghamton? I said, Brian, don't worry about Binghamton. You know, believe me, I will find the positives in Binghamton. That's not an issue. And then you go there and you get to really appreciate that community. You know, Tom Mitchell does a wonderful job. I wouldn't say that we ever spoiled our players, but they never had a want for anything. You know, if they needed it, they got it. They were treated like kings around that town, and they are. I mean, the fans in that town absolutely love their hockey players, and the guys that wanted to get out and experience that did. And then there's always going to be the few that just want to not get out and experience that and not give something really an opportunity. And I think that's a little bit of what happened. And I think now what you will find is Andre grows and matures and, you know, gets to be a little bit more adult-like. He's going to know where to go to find the positives in Binghamton, you know, because believe me, that was a great place to play. And I think that's a great venue for young players to play in. It's just that they don't necessarily view it that way.
Ottawa had a tough season a few seasons ago. And aside from the obvious purge of talent from the championship roster and season to last year where it wasn't the greatest season, what was the biggest difference besides the lack of talent or the loss of the talent there?
You know, the thing you got to understand is the American League is a developmental league, you know, and it's really not so much about the winning. And I don't think there's anybody, any executive, any fan, any coach, any player that wouldn't say that's a fair comment, you know, because it really is at that level more about the development than it is about the winning. But having said that, to me, winning feeds development. And that was an absolutely difficult season for everybody. And it's circumstantial, without a doubt. I don't know that you could really fault anybody or point a finger at anyone, you know. But it was a hard year on everybody. You know, again, I understand that the American League is about development. But I believe you can do both. You know, I believe you can do both. And if you take a look at the organizations that have not just had success in the American League, that they have also pushed that right up to the NHL, I think we did that. You know, I think that the players that came out of Binghamton the year we won the championship, and not just with us, with Ottawa, but went on to play in other organizations, I think that just feeds that philosophy. I think winning is very healthy in the American League, but it's not the end all.
The next question, actually, I was going to ask you, as you know, as your role as an AHL coach, are you there to win or are you there to develop players? And you answered that perfectly.
American League coach. Yeah. No, development first, without a doubt. Without a doubt, development comes first.
And the follow-up to that, I was going to ask you, how much direction and autonomy does the organization actually give you as a coach? Do they have any input whatsoever into line combinations or ice time?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course they do. You know, it's really, it's their baby. But I will say this, I enjoyed, again, coming from two different organizations. You know, I can speak from experience with New Jersey and Lou Lamoriello, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for. Obviously, he's a guy that I've leaned on many times, but very, very involved in the development of the younger players in New Jersey. Now they're in Albany. But in Ottawa, I appreciated the fact that Brian, you know, had faith in you, he had trust in you, and he allowed you to do, you know, what you felt was best under the circumstances, you know. So again, I really appreciated Brian. I liked his philosophy. I liked his approach. He's a class guy. And that was one of the things that I did appreciate about it.
Just a question for you. There was the infamous comments made after that 3-0 loss where you made some quotes to the local media in Binghamton about third and fourth line players on the Binghamton roster might be a little better if they were able to develop at the ECHL level. Going back to that time, I think you also mentioned that it might not have been the best place for development at the time. Could you elaborate maybe on what led or built up to that point where you felt like you had to come back to that?
You know what? Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind commenting on that. That was actually in Wilkes-Barre. I remember the comment. And, you know, it's one of those moments where you finish the interview and you're like, why did you say that? You know, like, I know better than that. And I think you guys have been around me enough to know that it's not generally the way I speak. And so really what it was it was a coach coming off a championship season, you know, and not everything went right that year either. We just found a way to make it work. You know, it's not like we just walked through that season without injuries or call-ups or playing shorthanded. I mean, we did. But we managed to get through it, and we had the depth to make it happen. And I really think what it was is probably my expectations were high, and then we didn't get off to a good start. So obviously, I'm a little bit frustrated, and coaches are, it happens. And, you know, I wore my emotions on my sleeves. I made some comments that I shouldn't have. And I'm sure that this is one of those things, because I've seen this before, and I think you guys are onto something, you know. But I will say this. I apologize to Brian and the organization for making those comments. I apologize to my team for making those comments. And then I just put it behind me. But lesson learned.
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of touched on earlier the amount of players, like you lost a couple of blue liners to Ottawa, being Jared Cowan, other players to over in Europe and other NHL clubs. How did losing Lee Sweat in the middle of the summer throw a wrench in your blue line plans?
Well, again, you know, I think it played a big factor, obviously. You know, that was a guy that I know the organization had intended to come in and take Andre Benoit's spot, and we had lost a number of quality defensemen, guys that really contributed to us winning that championship, you know. But the time was right, you know, to bring in that player, which was Lee Sweat, and to also go just a little bit younger. And so when that didn't happen, obviously, we just didn't have that veteran presence back there. So then we just had to go it alone and stay young. And it's just not really, at the end of the day, it's not really as much as you think the American League is a younger players league. It is, but it's not. And the players that do very well are those teams, the teams that do very well are those that have that solid veteran core, you know, that force the younger players to earn their ice time, that allow your locker room to grow when things are tough because they're there to show leadership. And it's an extension of the coach into the locker room, you know. So I think it had a big impact on how the season went, without a doubt.
Now, Kurt, I don't know if you've noticed this, but people in Ottawa, the media, the fans, they have this eye on all of the bright and shiny prospects that wind up in the AHL. And in Ottawa, Robin Lehner is one of those guys. And much is being made these days over the weight that he's reportedly lost over the offseason, whether it's 25 to 35 pounds, it varies. Coming into camp last year for you, did you find that he came in maybe too soft? And maybe could you possibly comment on whether or not kind of the evaluation of Robin Lehner's character, his attitude, his maturity, are those worries from Ottawa overblown?
I mean, you'd have to ask Brian really about if it's a worry for the organization. But I can only tell you that Robin Lehner is a talent. He's just a young talent, you know. And there will be some spots along the way. And, you know, that's the challenge of Robin that I really love, actually, you know. I mean, you want to be a little bit challenged as a coach, and in the American League you're going to be challenged because, you know, I've told many, and I think you guys will agree with this, the American Hockey League is the hardest league in the world to coach. There's no doubt about it. It's not the best league in the world to coach. It's the hardest because you're dealing with young players that have come up through the ranks and been treated special all their lives, and they've got this sense of entitlement. You know, and none of them really, number one, not only do they not want to be there, but they don't think they should be there. You know, so you can kind of see where I'm coming from with that. And I think Robin was a little bit of that, and that's fine. That's what makes him such a good competitor, you know, because he believes in himself. You know, and when he's on, I'm just here to tell you that he is a special player. And right now, the only thing is, as a young player, he hasn't found his consistency. And there will be a day that he's going to grow and that he's going to mature, and that day may already be here. I mean, I don't know. I'm not around him. But I know that in the 2 years that I had him, he grew a lot. And I think part of the reason that he grew was for some of the things that I used to get a lot of attention for, which was that I wasn't a fan, and that was never the case. I really appreciate Robin, and I think there will be a day that he's going to look back and he's going to really appreciate some of the things that I helped him with. I just believe that guys need to earn their ice time. I believe that a goalie should have to earn the net. I don't think you want to just hand it to him. I think that's a big mistake. And again, I'm going to go back and tell you, I love Brian for the way he backed me with that stance with all our players, you know, because he doesn't want them to just be given ice time. He wants them to earn the ice time. So that's a little bit of the challenge that you get in the American League.
It's funny because a few times there, you're just talking about people having to earn ice time, not wanting to be there. And all that kept going through my mind was Nikita Filatov, Nikita Filatov, Nikita Filatov. Mm-hmm. But Creech has another question for you.
Yeah, just listening to all your comments, it does sound like you did have a lot of say in how you started your goaltenders and touching on the maturity of Robin Lehner, because it looks like this guy's going to be an unreal talent, in my eyes anyways. He looks like he has the tools. But is that part of your reason for starting Barry Brost in four straight games to start the Calder Cup run? It was because of his experience and Robin's lack of experience?
No, it's that Barry deserved to start.
Yeah.
In game one. That's what it was. And that, again, I'm just going to tell you, I mean, I'm going to sing the praises of Brian. I mean, there would have been some GMs, and Lou might have been one of them, that said, no chance are you starting Barry Brust in game one of the first round of the Calder. You're not doing it, you know? But again, it wasn't just a Kurt decision. You know, like, we haven't even talked about Rick Walmsley. He was involved in all the decisions that we made. You know, I mean, I always had the final say, but I have a lot of respect for Rick as well, and I think he does a wonderful job. And those were decisions that we made together, and we did them with two things in mind. You know, what's best for the team, what's best for the player. And Barry Brust in game one deserved it. He got it. What other way should we have done it? You know, and I think if you look at the big picture, Robin benefited from that, because when I went back to him when Barry wasn't getting it done, he thrived because he was so PO'd and he wanted to prove everybody wrong that we rode him right to a Calder Cup championship. Now you tell me what's wrong with that.
Three straight overtime wins to do it too in that series. Unreal.
Yeah, and again, you see what I'm saying. You know, sometimes people are a little too narrow in their sightedness when you got to look at the big picture. And when you're developing players, there will be moments that you have to take a little bit in the short term to benefit in the long term. And that's all I ever did. And as a coach, I'm just here to tell you, you really grow to appreciate your players. You know, I mean, you just care about them. You care for them. And it's no different than anybody that has children. You want what's best for your children. And the hardest thing to do is discipline, you know. And so it was never that I didn't appreciate my players. The reason I did what I did is because I did appreciate my players, and I was looking at the big picture and doing what I thought was going to be best for them down the road, and that was it.
Now, we've talked about Robin's growth as a goaltender. One defenseman who I'm particularly interested in is Patrick Wierkoch. Over the past two or three years that he's been in the organization, we've kind of heard that Wierkoch was going to develop better at the NHL level or be a better pro in the NHL than he would be in the AHL. But to do that, he has to still improve at the AHL level. I know last year was difficult to evaluate him because of his traumatic injury, but did you see any growth in his game last season?
A little bit, and I like Patty. I like Patty a lot. He's got a lot of ability, a lot of talent. And if he gets stronger, you know, the one thing with Patty is he was always just out-muscled on pucks, you know. And so he's a finesse player for sure, but you still got to be able to win your battles. So if he can win some battles, he's got really good hockey IQ. He's a wonderful kid. His character is good as anybody's. So if he can just get to be a little bit stronger. And, you know, that was a challenge that we gave him last year in our exit meetings. And, you know, and I think he's the kind of kid that just wants it so bad. And, you know, he would do whatever he's got to do. But time will tell with Patty, you know, whether he's going to make it or not.
As an organization, we've placed a lot of emphasis on watching these skilled players develop at the AHL level, guys like Lehner, Weirkoch, and this season much of the focus is going to be on guys like Shane Prince, Mika Zibanejad, Jakob Silverberg, and et cetera, et cetera. Are there less heralded prospects within Ottawa's system who you particularly took a keen notice of? And
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you meant Borovitz. I mean, he gets a lot of attention. Gryba, you know, there's a Eric Gryba. You know, as long as they continue to just, you know, show him some patience, you know, he's a little bit of a buck and bronco, but he's going to be good. You know, I mean, he's come a long way, and he's a guy that if they get him under contract for a couple more years, you guys are going to see him and you're going to love him, you know, because he's a really good player. He's big. He's got size. He's strong. He's intelligent. He's going to make mistakes, but at the end of the day, he just needs an opportunity and a coach that believes in him, and he'll be just fine. David Dzinski, same thing. You know, like, he came so far in the 2 years, and, you know, comes out of Junior B. I mean, he didn't have much of a background at all when it came to, you know, playing, you know, a high level of hockey. And, again, last year he was one of our better and more consistent players. So there's two right there, and I'm sure if I thought long and hard, I could come up with a couple more. But I think those are two of the kind of players that you're talking about that are going to someday come into Ottawa and do very well.
Now, Kurt, before we let you go, what we usually do at the end of our interview segments is we play a quick hit thing where we'll give you a word or a sentence, and then you give us the first thing that pops in your mind. Would you be interested in playing a little name association with us?
You can make me look bad.
No, not at all. First name for you, Casper Dagovins.
Casper Dagovins. Dogman, he's a good guy. I love him to death.
Nikita Filatov.
Moody.
Tim Murray.
Great, great talent evaluator. Absolute wonderful talent evaluator.
Zach Smith.
Ooh.
Zach Smith.
Oh, Zach Smith. Smitty. Smitty. That's what I think there. But let me just touch on him. I really appreciated him as well. You know what I mean? Like, there's a guy that came down and, you know, always had a great attitude. And, you know, if we don't have him in our lineup, we do not win a Calder Cup. And I think he really benefited because of it as well.
I went to a Calder Cup game during that run, and I did pay close attention to it, and I noticed that you did go to him a lot in key face-off situations and penalty kill and stuff like that. So I did notice that. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that's not a one-word answer, but I just have trouble giving you one-word answers. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
We're not complaining.
is that it? You got more?
Yeah, Mark Borowiecki.
Oh, he's just character. You know, he's a warrior.
Grady Wittenberg.
Grady. I think of his bald head.
And that's it. You're done.
Yeah, well. Hey, guys, I appreciated it.
No, you Kurt, know, thanks
I,
for coming
I,
on.
I got to tell you, can I just say, I really, what I said, I meant. And I know that there will be people that read. I don't know if this is something that you're going to write about or whether you're going to play it. And I think it's just going to add to the confusion of why I'm not there. But, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, what's done is done, and we all got to move on. And I've been in the pro game a long time. I love the pro game. And don't be surprised one day if I don't make it back there in some capacity with some organization. And, you know, I really do appreciate everything about Ottawa, and I just want to say that because when I left, I never really had much of a chance to say it.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us, spending half an hour talking to us. We wish you all the best at the University of Alabama, Huntsville. And if you can build that program back up to the top, we'll be pulling for you. That's awesome.
Hey, keep an eye on us, because once we've won our third game, we've done better than they did last year. Okay?
There you go. There you go. Kurt, thanks for coming on the show.
Hope you had a great time. Thanks for having me, guys. See you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Good candid interview from what seems like to be a great guy.
In-depth, honest answers.
Wish him the best. Wish him the best. That's going to be a challenging position. It's going to take time. Hopefully, he succeeds in what he does. And at some level, it has to be kind of rewarding just to be able to, you know, you're coming into what looks to be a terrible hockey team. And he's right when he says there's no place else that you can go but up.
Bang on. There's no way he can't improve. And over time, if he makes that like a solid program, it's the only Division I school in the South. Huge. Get hockey going down there.
Raise the profile. Supposedly it's a good collegiate town. One of our readers said that as well. Huntsville, Alabama.
Although he's changing from black and red to blue and white.
You're still hung up on that Leaf stuff?
Yeah. That's four series you're talking about CBC playing.
In conclusion to our show, is there anything else that you want to hit on before we go?
Talk about Cats comments.
Yes, we haven't hit on that yet. Good call. What would you do if Eugene Melnyk all of a sudden couldn't get an arena deal? Let's say Scotiabank Place is dire. The situation is dire.
He wants to move it downtown.
He wants it downtown. Where it should be. But yes, anyways.
What would I do? Nothing.
Yeah,
but
well, if you went to Seattle to market the team, or at least give that threat, because that's all it is, right? You know Edmonton as a franchise is not going anywhere. But what a PR blunder. How are you supposed to get the fans behind you in a situation like that?
I didn't realize that they'd be upset. Something I'm paraphrasing, but
they're hockey fans. You went to Seattle. What are they supposed to think?
With Wayne Gretzky.
That's like you being caught with some other girl by your girlfriend or your wife and saying, wait, we're just hanging out, having a drink. Nothing happened. I didn't know you'd be this upset. Well, really?
Weak move. I don't like it. How about you?
Oh, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. I was having fun with it on Twitter, but
I think a market could probably survive there, but that's balls.
Oh, they're going to get an expansion team. That's going to be the thing to come out of this whole CBA. The owners will get their cut from the players eventually, regardless of how big it is. They're going to get a cut back from the players, and they're going to turn around. And I wouldn't be surprised to see two expansion franchises pop up, whether it's in Toronto, Quebec City, Seattle, wherever. And the NHL owners will collect expansion fees, which to this point are not shared with the players. And they're going to get their money. And it's a joke. Well, it's not a joke. But
they'll create more jobs.
Power to them. More jobs for NHLers, yes. People like Chris Bartsch can stay employed.
They're just adding another market that's going to hate Vancouver.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Speaking of the Oilers, their farm team in Oklahoma is going to be pretty damn good.
Pretty stacked.
Once Taylor Hall is cleared medically, he's going to be sent down.
Eberle, who lit the NHL on fire last year, playing in the AHL.
I don't think he's that good. Do you think he's going to repeat what he did last year?
I think so. He's solid, man. I've been a huge fan of his since juniors. He's clutch. He's got unbelievable hands. He's a leader. I don't know if he has the size. Might want to put on some beef and get stronger, but I like Jordan Eberle. I think he's going to be a solid player.
You have this innate liking of guys who have a big gap in between their teeth.
Who's the other?
I think I've seen you with a Michael Strahan jersey on before.
No chance.
The AHL is going to be a good league this year.
You're making fun of me for wanting to go down to Binghamton, but
it's going to be a good league.
For sure.
Depending on how long the lock it is, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's going to be the interesting part, too, because you figure a lot of what happens right now in the AHL season is going to essentially be the NHL training camp for who does or does not come up to participate in Ottawa's camp whenever the lockout ends, right?
Who do you see it being?
Borowiecki will probably get the call. Cowan, obviously, is coming up.
Who's the top six for?
Maybe, I don't think a Weirkoch probably at this stage come up because he needs to play, especially after what happened to him last season. Andre Benoit, I can't see really coming up in a training camp's environment. You know, he's just the guy who's filling in the event of an injury, knock on wood. Up front, tough to say. Silverberg for sure. After that, no promises.
Should be interesting.
It's deep, though. Like we said before Klendorf came on the show, when you have guys who are afterthoughts in Stefan DaCosta, Andre Pettersson, and Mike Hoffman, damn, they're doing something right. At the very least, you've built up a wealth of prospects who you can either bring up to the organization or you can package them in a trade to get a player who's more experienced and more talented, hopefully.
Create internal competition as well.
And that's another aspect of it that we never touched on.
Bishop and Leonard going head-to-head, just making each other better. Although I would like to see Leonard play.
How'd you like to be
games?
Nathan Lawson right now? It's like, ECHL? Really? I play for the Islanders, man.
Bet he's hoping. I bet he's hoping for a deal to come pretty quick.
Oh, man. Did you see that Wade Redden article on ESPN?
No. Oh, I saw
because
it, but I didn't read
situation,
it.
He has to sign a PTO. Yeah. For him to play in the NHL, he has to sign a PTO. I don't even think he gets his money.
Poor guy.
Oh, nothing is coming up Wade Redden
these
days.
Hopefully there's an amnesty clause and he can be bought out and sign on as a 6D for a million.
Just when you think it couldn't get worse for Wade Redden, it does.
What has he got? Six more games till 1,000?
I don't even think it's that many. I think it's like four.
Poor guy. I'm saying poor guy, and he's collected $6.5 million the last couple of years.
Yeah. But kudos to Wade for that resiliency to stay in the NHL to collect that kind
of stuff. His teammates bought him a nice watch, too.
What more
can he ask for?
Do you think whenever his contract ends, I believe he's 36 right now. Or around that age, anyways.
How old's Phillips? He's
close to the same age, I believe. Yeah. I think Phillips is what, a year older, no?
I think so.
Do you think that guy has a shot?
Coming back? If he can sign a new deal once there's a new CBA, I think he could sign on as a bottom pairing defenseman for league minimum to $1 million.
Maybe if league expands by two teams.
You don't think he could catch on right now as bottom pairing? I guess it would be tough because guys want their younger guys in. It's a young guys game now.
When's the last time you actually watched Wade Redden play?
I would have taken him, not if I was Sens brass, but I would have signed him to a deal worth $1 to $2 million coming off that contract in Ottawa. I think he could have still played.
If it ended now?
No, before.
Oh.
I would have had him on my bottom pairing coming out, like not in Ottawa, but as another club. It's not his fault the Rangers threw $6.5 million over, 6 years? That's a joke. Did they not watch hockey for 2 years before that?
Yeah, but at the same time, you have to realize if that's a contract that goes south, which many predicted would at the time.
Absolutely. Anyone who's watching.
You have to also realize that a team with that deep of pockets will send you down to the AHL to bury
exactly.
your contract. If that guy signed a similar deal, maybe not as much money. In Minnesota? Team like Minnesota, Nashville, wherever.
He's
still playing in the league.
Absolutely.
Maybe he's bought out. No. I haven't seen you in weeks.
Yeah. Maybe we had it at one of the weddings we were at.
Yeah, that's true too.
A couple beers in us.
A couple.
Feels fresh. But seriously, I'd take him on my... Well, I don't know, maybe not now, but I think he could catch on with someone for a league minimum on bottom pairing.
If he signed with Ottawa, it would essentially equate itself to being a 4-game publicity stunt. And I'm not trying to be mean. He has no utility. For a team that has this much young talent coming through the system, there is absolutely no reason to go out and spend money on a guy.
Oh, for sure. And
just because you're paying for those 996 games that he's already played at the NHL level.
When I was saying I would sign him, as another club, not the Senators.
Okay.
Like, I he's done with Ottawa, and I would never like to see him back. No hard feelings, nothing against Wade Redden. It's over. Time to move on. But as another club, sure, why not? Why not?
I love the fact that you're smiling as you're saying it. He's done. It's over.
Like a Band-Aid right off.
Like a Band-Aid right off. And maybe that's the cue to get off as well.
Yeah.
Creech, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, buddy.
It's been a pleasure.
Solid. Are we going to promise again to be in discussion. Here more often?
No, because it never works out. But yeah, we're hoping to do these more frequently than we have been. And hopefully as the hockey games start happening more and more frequently, we'll be in here more often.
Are we going to start talking about junior A hockey?
Yeah, we'll talk some CGAHL. It'll be fantastic. But yeah, thanks for coming in. A thank you to the athletic department at the University of Alabama Huntsville for helping us get Kurt Kleinendorst on the show. Kurt, thank you very much for coming on the show. We enjoyed having you. Hopefully we'll have a chance to touch base with you, hopefully down the road when your program is doing well. And listeners, thanks for checking in. Thanks for the patience in, well, what's been a couple months anyways for us as a layoff. So thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Any feedback, comments, emails, feel free to send them our way. Or tweets. Creature1200 at Sixth Sense. That's it. That's a wrap. Catch you next time. Creech, thanks.
Thanks, buddy.